Hey guys, welcome back to Hello, My Name is True Crime. My name's Kayla.
My name's Travers. Before we jump into the case, we want to give a huge shout out to our new Patreon members and everyone who's left us a review. Thank you to our newest Patreon member, Ruth. Also, thank you, Cosette, for your 5-star review as well. Always Angry from Ireland and Lemonelli32 from Great Britain. You guys rock.
Yes, thank you guys so much. We really appreciate it. We love reading your guys' reviews.
So remember, you too can rate us and review us on Apple Podcast, and you can become a Patreon member for as little as $1 a month, or you can donate as much as you want to.
Just $1.
Yeah.
That's all it costs.
So I guess that's it. We should probably scuba dive into this episode.
On February 25th, 2014, a 21-year-old riverboat worker from Meridian, Mississippi, asked his tugboat captain for permission to debark the next day due to a family emergency, which he was granted with the promise that he would be back later that same day for shift change at 5 p.m. But he would never return because his life would come to a tragic end from a single shotgun wound to the head. The events that conspired the afternoon of February 26, 2014 still have everyone wondering, was this a suicide? Or was it really a cold-blooded murder and a botched investigation? Christian Andriacchio was born on November 4th, 1992, to parents Todd and Ray Andriacchio. As the middle child, Christian, his older brother Josh, and younger sister Alexa grew up in Meridian, Mississippi, where they would spend most of their time on the lake, boating, riding jet skis. Christian, who was always the life of the party, wouldn't miss a beat when it came to having fun and making friends. Most people thought of him even as a daredevil. In addition to having a magnetic personality that would draw people in, he had a great work ethic starting at a very young age. So it was no surprise that his biggest goal was to become the youngest tugboat captain, which he had begun working towards when he started working at Magnolia Marine at just 18 years old. The young mate would be home for 15 days and work 30-day hitches at a time. So this gave him the best of both worlds, plenty of time with his friends and family while he was home, but also 30 days of doing what he loved most, working on the water. Christian had a great life, and he worked very hard for it. He made quite a lot of money, especially for a 21-year-old. He had a couple of cars, he kept a bit of cash saved in his lockbox. He was saving as much money as possible while still having enough cash to spend so that he could do the things that a young man would want to do. So it's safe to say that he had a very bright future ahead of him. There had been one rocky thing in Christian's life, his love life. He and his high school sweetheart Avery had decided to call it quits due to her trying to follow her dream of becoming a veterinarian, as well as Christian following his dream and being gone for long periods of time on the boat. When they broke up, they were still both under the impression that at some point they would end up back together, when they were both in a more stable place in life and had reached their goals.
However, a little while after the breakup, Christian had begun dating a girl that was a bit younger than him, 17-year-old Whitley Goodman. When Christian's family met Whitley, she seemed like a cute, quiet young lady that seemed to really like Christian. Quickly into their relationship, Whitley had told Christian that she had a very troubled childhood and didn't have a stable home. With Andriacchio's being the definition of Southern hospitality, they invited her to live with them. Christian had always been drawn to people that had less than him. He always tried to save people, and Whitley was no exception. But within a month of living in the Andriacchio home, the true side of Whitley came to a boiling surface. She was a bit more troubled than any of them had realized in the beginning. Whitley not only had a problem with drugs, but also seemed to be a ticking time bomb. When she focused in on trying to drive a wedge between Christian and his family, they all picked up on the things she had tried to hide from them. Whitley had come to Christian many times to tell him that his younger sister Alexa was doing things that she wasn't allowed to do, like smoking cigarettes or hanging out with boys. Whitley claimed that she just really didn't want to see Alexa go down the same paths that she herself had gone down, and insisted that Christian say something about it. But the reality of it was, Alexa had not done those things. In fact, she had been with their mother, Ray, at home. Whitley had also made many posts on social media about smoking pot, doing meth, and just a lot of things that a 17-year-old shouldn't be putting on social media, or probably even doing, for that matter. These were all things that Christian's family had seen, so it was almost like she was taunting them, trying to play off this nice girl persona to their faces, but then she would put out these insane posts on Facebook.
I'm sure that would be very difficult as a parent to kind of like not try to control your adult, young adult child's life, but at the same time kind of being witness to these things.
Mm-hmm.
I can only imagine how difficult that would be.
Yeah, absolutely.
At one point, Whitley had found a picture of Christian and Avery after digging through Christian's parents' room without permission. When she brought it back to his mother, Ray, there were these large holes in the photo where Avery had been that Whitley claims she shot through with a gun. Whitley made a pretty big deal about the fact that there were still pictures of Avery in the house, even after the Andriacchios had tried explaining that Avery and her family had become part of the Andriacchio family because of the fact that she and Christian had dated for so long. So, when they found out that Whitley had taken items out of their bedroom without permission, they really believed that she was really crossing a line. And with Ray's background in psychology, she knew that firsthand something was not right and there were major red flags. The last straw, though, was when Todd and Ray found their daughter Alexa downstairs passed out after taking Xanax that Whitley had given her. Not only did Whitley provide the drugs to their minor daughter, she also left her there alone and high on something that she had never taken before. This is when they had decided that it was time for Whitley to move out.
After this, there was some tension in the household. Christian felt an obligation to take care of Whitley, to keep her safe and to make sure that she was financially taken care of. So when his older brother Josh had asked him to move in and help split the cost of bills, Christian was quick to take him up on his offer. The only thing that Josh asked was that Whitley only come over to stay when Christian was home from the boat. But it wasn't long until Whitley had moved in completely, whether Christian was home or not. For Whitley, it was every teenage girl's wish to have an apartment where there were no rules, no one telling you what to do. Christian and Josh were both working jobs that required them to leave for long periods of time, and this meant that Whitley had no responsibilities since Christian and Josh were paying for the apartment. Christian even provided her with his BMW to drive and would make sure that she had enough money while he was away.
That's a shame.
Yeah, it kind of puts me in the mindset of like military dudes that,
yes,
like, you know, and they're away on a deployment or whatever, and it's like, oh, just you know, here's access to my account, here's everything he needs back home, whatever, I'll be back in a year.
Right. I totally agree. I mean, not all military men, military wives, military girlfriends have this problem, but we've seen it in quite a few of our friends.
It's a
very common
statistic
thing.
It's a stereotype. It's a thing that happens enough times that it's...
But it does. It's very similar.
Yeah.
Very similar situation.
It's just the difference is he's like
a young boy
in the
on
Navy.
A boat.
Yeah.
Right. Around this time, there had been an accident on the boat involving Christian falling overboard. After Whitley found out about the incident, she began to ask Christian about life insurance and making sure that she was the secondary beneficiary so that if something would happen, she would be paid out. One of her reasons was that she had briefly thought that she was pregnant, so she would ask Christian things like, what happens if you get killed? Who's going to take care of me and the baby? However, it was found that she had already learned that she, in fact, was not pregnant, but she still proceeded to tell him that if she would have been pregnant, then there would have been no one to take care of her and no place for her to go if something were to happen to him.
And that's when I would have said, Whitley, grow the fuck up, get a job, learn how to take care of yourself.
He had that personality.
Too good-hearted,
right.
I know.
He just felt obligated,
yeah, and
sadly. You can tell he's a really good guy.
I know.
His parents quickly stepped in after Christian brought this up to them. When he asked if they thought that he should take Avery off the policy and add Whitley's name to it, they immediately thought that Whitley had found out about the life insurance policy because Christian did in fact have Avery listed as the second beneficiary. They strongly advised against Christian doing so, as they knew that this was a bad idea. As much as they wanted to support their son and his choices, they knew that Christian and Whitley had a very complicated relationship. Both Whitley and Christian had trust issues, and the fact that both of them were so immersed in this relationship created a very toxic environment.
Yeah. Is Christian just kind of unaware of the stuff that his parents caught Whitley, you know, doing with his younger sister?
I mean, they had brought it up to him, and again, like, that's when they told him, like, hey, you, like, she's got to go. And
yeah,
I think
right,
it really, I think it really did end up driving a wedge for a little bit because he felt torn, you know,
right,
like he was kind of like in the middle, you know, choosing between his family and this girl, that he cared about. Right.
Yeah.
And he kept kind of like trying to, well, you know, like making excuses and like not really blowing it off, but making excuses for her, you know, and he was in a tough situation, I guess. Like, I can totally understand.
Me too.
Christian had threatened to kick Whitley out of the apartment that he shared with his brother on a few occasions due to her drug use and because she was known to take off and hang out with other guys when he was away working on the boat. Once, when Christian was suspicious that Whitley was using drugs while he was away, he asked his brother to give her a drug test, and if she failed, then he gave orders to kick her out immediately. When Josh approached Whitley about the drug test, she refused, claiming that she would fail for marijuana. After pressing Whitley more, she finally agreed to take the test, and she did indeed fail, but it was for more than just marijuana.
Yeah.
She also had benzos and other drugs in her system as well. She was then kicked out of the apartment, but would eventually make her way back in.
When Christian left for his 30-day stint again on February 22, 2014, the couple were once again having problems in their relationship due to Whitley's behavior. So Christian had been very clear before he boarded the boat that she was not allowed to drive his BMW while he was gone at work because he couldn't trust her not to have other guys with her riding around in his car. Just a few days into his month of being away, Christian started receiving calls from a friend named Dylan Swearingen telling him that Whitley had been riding around in the BMW, but not only that, she'd been seen with the guy that she would buy drugs from. Dylan was a sort of mutual friend of Christian and Whitley. Christian had known Dylan for many years. They played sports together growing up and still ran in the same circle of friends by the time Christian started dating Whitley. Many of Christian's crew members claim that he had received multiple calls and texts from a guy that was telling him that Whitley was hanging out with some guy. Christian then decided that he was going to go home, get his car back from Whitley, and kick her out for good. This is when he received permission from his captain to leave the boat. Christian told him that he had a family emergency and he needed to disembark the following morning. He told his captain that his dad and sister were being kicked out by his mother and he needed to go home to let them into his apartment. The deal was that Christian would need to find someone to cover his shift and be back by 5 p.m. for crew change. He had tried to make plans for one of his co-workers that was home at the time to pick him up originally, but instead he made arrangements with Dylan to pick him up.
Christian got off the tugboat early in the morning on February 26, 2014, in St. Rose, Louisiana, a town near New Orleans. Dylan arrived to pick him up around 8 a.m. since Christian didn't have a vehicle because his Jeep was parked at the Magnolia Marine Dock in Vicksburg, and Whitley had his BMW. They then stopped for gas before making the 3.5-hour trip back to Meridian, Mississippi. This would have meant that Christian and Dylan should have arrived back at Josh and Christian's Willow Ridge apartment somewhere close to 11:30 a.m. Things start to get a little iffy here because all we have to go off of for a timeline are statements from both Dylan and Whitley, which both had discrepancies. Once Dylan and Christian arrived back at the apartment, an argument ensued immediately between Whitley and Christian. Christian had asked Whitley where she had been because he had a tracker in place on her phone and knew that she had spent the night with a boy named Matt Miller, who will later come into play. After Christian pressed her for more information, Whitley finally told him that she couldn't remember too much because she had been taking Xanax all that night. Dylan claimed that he had stayed upstairs during the argument, but he did peek down at them at one point and heard Christian asking Whitley numerous times if she loved him, before Christian pulled out his gun, cocked it, and put it to his head, and asked her one more time if she loved him, before Whitley grabbed the gun. Dylan claims that he then took the gun and hid it behind the curtain so that Christian wouldn't know where it was.
Dylan claims that things calmed down after this, and they all decided to watch a movie before Dylan asked Christian and Whitley if they wanted him to go pick up some food. He said that Christian then gave him his debit card and told him to pick up some Chick-fil-A. Dylan also claims that Christian told him to stop by his credit union and take out all of his money. Dylan was seen on surveillance at the credit union at 12:30 p.m. attempting to withdraw money from Christian's account, but he was turned away because he did not have the PIN number. Phone records show that Dylan then made a call to Christian's phone. We also know Dylan did in fact pick up Chick-fil-A at 103 based on a receipt that was found.
I'm sorry, but if somebody's going to tell you to take out all the money in their bank account, you would think that they would give you their PIN number and some sort of information.
Yeah, probably so. Or if it was that big of a deal, they'd probably go with you or something.
Right. Like, why? It doesn't make any sense. Why?
I don't know,
why would somebody be like, yeah, sure, just go ahead and take out all the money I have in my account? Whatever.
White meat chicken's pretty expensive these
days.
Maybe it's the pickles or the way they bread it. I don't know.
I guess. Yeah, that's suspicious.
Pretty suspicious, yeah. Dylan's statement also stated that when he arrived back at the apartment, things between the couple seemed fine and that Christian and Whitley had decided to take a ride so they could talk. Dylan stayed behind and fell asleep. When he woke up 2 hours later, Whitley was asleep on the couch and Christian was sitting there smoking a cigarette. Dylan said he told Christian he was going to go to Best Buy to check out some speakers, but before he left, Dylan stated that he gave the gun back to Christian because he thought things had calmed down enough that he wouldn't hurt himself. He said he had told Christian to unload the gun and not to touch it. There was no footage from Best Buy to verify that Dylan was there like he claimed.
If you're gonna take the gun away in the first place and hide it, I don't think you'd give it back so soon.
Yeah, probably not. Maybe a week or so later or something like that. When you're absolutely positive that your non-suicidal friend is no longer willing to commit suicide.
It's really one of the dumbest things I've heard.
It is really fucking stupid.
It doesn't make any sense.
Super far-fetched. Because this kid was driven and motivated and he had a lot to live for. And he was stoked about being alive.
Right. We want to thank Best Fiends for sponsoring today's episode. Guys, we have to tell you about this new mobile puzzle game called Best Fiends.
The cool thing is that it's a casual game, so you don't have to be a big gamer to be able to play it.
You collect these cute little characters that are bugs, you level them up, and use them to defeat the bad guy slugs. It's so fun. It's a match 3 puzzle game, but it's so different from the others because of the graphics and also the fact that you can play it offline to ensure that you can play it anytime, anywhere. The further you get, the more fun you'll have. And they update the game often, giving you new fun content.
Engage your brain with fun puzzles and collect tons of cute characters. Trust me, with over 100 million downloads, this 5-star rated mobile puzzle game is a must play.
Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play.
That's friends without the R, Best Fiends.
Trust us, you're going to love this puzzle game. Once Dylan arrived back at the apartment after going to Best Buy, he said that Christian was nowhere to be found. So he then decided he was going to walk around the house calling out Christian's name. And once he got no response, he then walked up the stairs and noticed that the light in the bathroom was on, so he thought that Christian might have been taking a shower. He then knocked on the door and asked him if he was okay, but since there was no answer from Christian, Dylan then walked back downstairs to wake up Whitley and told her that they needed to check on Christian. Instead, Whitley just went back to sleep. So Dylan claims that he then went back up to the bathroom and opened the door. This is when he's seen Christian laying face down across the bathtub full of blood. Dylan then yelled at Whitley and told her that Christian was dead and that they needed to call 911. He said Whitley immediately started screaming and ran upstairs to hold Christian while Dylan called 911 at 4:45 p.m. So Whitley hears Dylan yell at her, but did not hear a gunshot.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Some more interesting things are, I'm pretty sure the time allotted from when he...
Yeah, like the timeline is strange.
The timeline is super fucked.
It's very weird. Like, when we get down more into this, you guys are going to see, like, how weird the timeline is, because...
Yeah. It's like he's got like 6 hours to take care of everything, and there's like a... I'm just spitballing here, but, you know, like a 6 hours for everything. It's like a 3-hour drive there.
Right.
So it's going to be a 3-hour drive back to port, you know?
It's
and then
weird.
Like, oh, let's watch a movie. Oh, let's do this. Oh, let's do that. Oh, let's go get food.
Exactly.
Oh, I fell asleep. You know, like, yeah. What the hell?
Whitley's statement did not match up with Dylan's. Her statement oddly started on Saturday, February 22nd, the day Christian left on the boat. Most of what she had to say was about their relationship rather than what had actually happened that day.
Hmm.
She stated on the night he left, she went to a party with her family and Christian wouldn't talk to her for 2 days, insinuating that he was upset with her due to her trust issues. She went on to talk about how she had considered ending the relationship due to those trust issues, but she loved him. She said the night before, on the 25th, Christian had told her that he was quitting his job and coming home, but she told him that they needed to really talk about things and work things out before they could move forward in their relationship.
Yeah, because if homeboy quits his job, she ain't going to have no cash flow.
Well, I find it really hard to believe that he's just going to up and quit his job that he loved so much.
It's
just to come home and be with her.
Yeah, he doesn't. He's stuck. He's trapped.
Yeah.
And he doesn't know what to do.
It's like they tried really hard to put together an alibi, but
yeah.
It was like a shoddy job.
Yeah, they probably should have like talked to each other before they did this.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So Willie ended up saying that Christian had come home early that day and wanted to take a ride with her, where he told her that he felt like he couldn't make anyone happy, including her and his mom. There was no mention of an argument where Christian pointed a gun at his head. Whitley then said, after this, she laid down with their dog and went to sleep until Dylan woke her up. And she then went upstairs and found Christian face down. When Whitley was asked if Christian had ever talked about suicide or hurting himself, she said no. Whitley also claimed that she never once heard any gunshots while she was sleeping. So, again, she said no when they asked if he talked about hurting himself, insinuating that he did not put the gun to his head,
right,
like Dylan claimed.
She literally contradicted everything that Dylan said.
Exactly. And again, it was like she didn't give them really any information.
No.
She was complaining about
the relationship.
Yeah, that's it was more about that.
I'm going to break up with him. I'm going to end it because, like...
But I love him.
But, like, you know... Yeah, whatever, Whitley.
The first officer arrived at 5:05 p.m. And by 5:45... Chief James Lee arrived at the apartment and told everyone to basically wrap it up. He then ruled a suicide without ever going upstairs to look at the scene.
Wow, he must be good.
An officer was on their way to the Andreacchio home by 6:30 that evening, like an hour later, to advise them that Christian had committed suicide. It is... the weirdest thing.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the Tanner Ward case.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a quick investigation and that's it.
Yeah. I wouldn't even call that an investigation.
Heck no.
Like the chief didn't even go upstairs.
No.
Like, why was he at the scene in the first place?
Right.
Then.
Exactly.
You know?
He didn't even look at anything. He didn't go upstairs. He didn't look at any of the evidence.
So, like, basically, he's not doing
his job. There to bark order. Yeah, he definitely wasn't doing his
job. Wrap it up, guys. I've got a luncheon to go to tomorrow, and I don't really want to do the paperwork for
mm-hmm.
this, so.
Something definitely was going on there.
Mark this homicide a suicide, and let's go on about our day.
Right. Here's the thing. If the fact that there was only a 45-minute investigation, and that doesn't tell you anything... The scene at the apartment in no way was an indication that there was a definite suicide.
When Christian was found, as mentioned previously, He was face down, slumped over the side of the bathtub. His arms were hanging down outside of the bathtub. His knees were about 12 inches away from the bathtub, and his feet were crossed. This made his feet close to an inch into the doorway, meaning that there was no way that the door could have or should have shut like Dylan initially claimed it had been. I mean, why
right.
would you knock on an
exactly.
open door?
That's what's funny about this, too.
Mm-hmm. This bathroom is it's tiny. There's a bathtub, a toilet, and a sink, and it's just big enough for one person to utilize any of those things at any point in time.
Right. And, you know, another thing, there was very little to no blood splatter in the bathtub aside from the pools of blood inside of it.
Right. Yes. The position of Christian's body did not coincide with somebody that would have been standing in the bathroom and fell after having shot themselves.
Also, in Dylan's 911 call, he told the 911 operator that he noticed blood on the step, which again would also mean that the door would have had to have been open, right?
What step?
On the stairs up to the bathroom.
Why would that have anything to do with the door
because
being open?
If the door was shut, how would the blood go clear out and down the stairs?
Oh, you're talking that he's saying that he saw overspray from...
Yes.
Mm.
Even though he had told the 911 operator that the door was closed, that he had been knocking on it.
Yeah, that's also another interesting thing that somebody higher up should have paid attention to so they could have made a more accurate assessment mm-hmm. on the situation.
The entry wound on the right side of Christian's head was slightly above and behind his ear, with the exit point straight across. Christian appeared to have had a small fracture on the top of his head as well. I mean, maybe that could be from him standing towards the sink of the bathroom, and if somebody shot him, maybe he fell back and hit his head on something. I don't really know how else you would get a fracture on the top of your head.
I do.
How?
Foul play.
Well, yeah. Maybe they hit him with something. I mean, you're right, but...
Maybe they hit him with a gun.
Yeah. True.
But honestly, there's no way that you would be able to... from committing suicide, even if you did this 100,000 times, there's no way that the gun would go higher than where it's held. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's no way that the gun left the mark on his head from him shooting himself and it, you know,
right,
falling
like
out of his hand.
Getting
or
a fracture.
Like that.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. That,
right.
that wouldn't happen. But falling back, yeah. But.
Or getting hit with something.
Yeah. So crossed legs, though.
Yeah.
You don't fall down
Mm-mm.
with your legs crossed. There's that no that
and
that can't happen.
The way his body was positioned, like the crossed legs, and then just how his body was kind of like
leaning.
He was kind of stretched out,
yeah.
yeah, like leaning.
Yeah,
there's you're right. There's no way that he could have fallen like that, stretched out, and then had his legs crossed.
Now, had he kneeled down over the tub, crossed his legs, and then shot himself, there is the possibility that he could have scooted out away from it.
Yeah, I guess
and that
so.
Also would explain the only possible way that his legs would be crossed.
Right.
But
then you would think he would have had, like, bruising or marks from falling down
yes,
against the bathtub.
He most certainly would.
And he had no marks at all from falling down. Like, no marks on his knee, his legs, his stomach.
Ribs.
Nothing like that.
Yeah,
his ribs weren't. I mean, that you would think that they would be broken falling
not necessarily.
Like that.
Well,
all
I mean,
your
if
weight.
He was standing and he fell, yeah. But I'm talking about now, like, say he's just kneeling
True.
Over the bathtub. You
right.
know, in that case, I mean, there could be some mild bruising to his stomach
yeah.
and rib cage, depending on.
And he didn't have
things.
Any injuries at all.
Authorities found the bullet and the casing in the bathtub, yet there was no sign of the bullet hitting anywhere inside the tub. However, the bullet itself showed a lot because the tip of it was pretty mangled and it looked to be full of what looked like drywall, which would mean that the hole that was found around the wall outlet directly behind Christian may very well have been a bullet hole, but it was never tested by the police. Remember, they only spent about 45 minutes there before they were told to wrap it up, and most of that was probably questioning the witnesses.
Right.
Christian was right-handed, which is the same side in which the entry wound was, but the gun was found turned the other direction, pinned in between his left hip and the bathtub. The gun, at best, should have recoiled outward at his right side. There's no way in hell that it would have been pinned toward the left side of him in the bathtub.
Right. You know, I've shot pistols many times, And I don't like shooting them because I've been notorious for dropping them with the recoil of the gun when it kicks back.
Yeah.
And I'm right-handed as well. And even with that, I have never had one fly towards the left front of me. Ever.
Well.
Ever.
Yeah. But, I mean, you have to take into consideration that you can't hold a gun properly with two hands when it's aimed at your own head.
Exactly.
So there would be a lot of recoil. And what's even better is the gun was a 45 caliber Kimber. It's a semi-automatic pistol. Really nice, expensive, classy pistol. And it was found decocked, meaning the hammer was up. In order for this to happen with a semi-automatic gun, it has to physically be decocked. There's no way that Christian could have done this after he shot himself in the head, if that is what he truly did, which I truly do not think that's what happened.
Yeah.
A 45 has
I totally agree.
Yeah. A 45 has a much, much more powerful recoil than a 9mm mm-hmm. or a 380 or any
right,
smaller caliber.
Right, exactly.
Thing. So if you've got it pointed at the behind your ear, on that nice little flat spot behind your ear where it would like stabilize something, and you, that would launch out. It could bounce off the bathtub or whatever and put an indentation in there somewhere, something like that. Which
there were
no marks
anywhere in that bathroom indicating that gun hit anywhere.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there should have been a mark. Because even if he was all the way on the left side and he did that, the gun would have launched out of his freaking hand because he would not have had a good grip on it. And as soon as his body went limp, his body would go limp.
Exactly.
The gun would literally do
whatever it wanted to do.
Whatever. Well, not whatever it wanted to do. But
like scientifically it would do.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever it would do via physics. And I would imagine through rigorous amounts of testing and experimentation that it would do pretty much the same thing every single time without fail.
Another thing is that if Christian shot himself within the hour before police arrived, like was said, then the blood should not have been dried and coagulated like it was. It's not possible.
No.
With the time frame that Dylan and Whitley gave them, that should not have been like that.
No.
The blood should not have been dried and coagulated. Like, it's not possible.
Nope.
And also, the lividity on Christian's legs that was found on the back of his calves were mostly on the right leg, but it should have been on the shins and the knees because...
Yeah, that's the position he was
exactly.
in.
Exactly.
And if we know anything about lividity, right?
Yes, it's when the blood pools in the specific areas after death, so...
Like the low points in the body.
Right, so if you're laying down... It's going to pull towards the back of your calves like it did on
the
Christian.
Back of your calves, your butt cheeks, probably your shoulder
the backs
blades.
Of your arms, mm-hmm. yeah. Since he was up on his knees, it should have been on his feet, the front of his shins.
Knees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not possible.
Nope.
It's really not possible. And it's not like it was a little bit.
It was a lot.
There was a lot, especially on the right leg.
So what that would indicate is that...
He was laying on his back for a very, very long period of time post-mortem.
Yes. Therefore, that alone would point to the fact that him positioned the way he was positioned in that bathroom with no blood splatter or any indication that the, I'm doing air quotes, suicide was committed within that bathroom. It was somewhere else.
I agree. Well, no, what I think is if that bullet hole in there above that wall outlet... is in fact a bullet hole. My theory is that maybe Christian and Whitley were in the bathroom arguing, and either A, she shot him, and that's where the bullet hole came from, and they like cleaned up the bathroom. Because I never seen anywhere where that bathroom is tested with luminol. Not once.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, there should be splatter.
Exactly. There was no splatter in that bathroom anywhere at all. I've never seen anything like that. Like, I've never seen a gunshot wound not have any blood splatter.
You never will.
Exactly. Right.
Like, it's not like this is some crazy thing that's never happened before. It doesn't happen.
And here's the thing. Speaking of, like, them not clearly investigating it and cleaning stuff up, After the investigation, the family had come in to clean the house up.
Yeah, the family had to
Yeah, they had to come in and clean up the crime scene. They found that the authorities clearly did not look around.
You said crime scene.
Well, it is a crime scene, in my opinion.
Yeah, mine too.
They found that the authorities clearly did not look around enough because the family found a knife that was covered in blood.
A bloody knife.
And a t-shirt that was just completely covered in blood that was stuffed behind the toilet.
Yeah.
So
maybe that's what they used to wipe down the wall if they got blood anywhere or something like that. But Jesus, crime, right, come on.
Where did this shirt come from?
Yeah.
And they ended up giving it to police, which...
they probably lost.
Yep.
Gee.
Like every time they lose a big piece, not them specifically, but it just seems like it's in so many cases.
They have rooms bigger than most people's houses where they store stuff called evidence, okay? It's logged in. There's a guy who sits down there all the time, logs people in and out, or watches them log in, or makes sure that they, you know, whatever, you know, at least 9 to 5. Jesus.
Especially in the movies.
Especially in the movies. So, like, yeah, come on.
So they did bring Whitley and Dylan in for questioning. They were both tested for gunshot residue. And guess what?
Did they both test positive?
Yes.
Gee whiz.
Whitley actually came out to investigators before they even tested her and was like, look, I'm going to test positive. Telling you right now.
For a lot of things.
Right. Because she said she went shooting the night before with Matt Miller. Remember the boy that she was supposedly riding around with?
Her drug dealer?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
She went shooting with him and his cousin. This was 12 hours before her hands were ever even tested. So you're not going to wash your
hands. She didn't wash her
hands. You're not
going to
take a shower. Like, no.
Bathed?
No. And Dylan, he tested positive too. But he was never questioned about why he had gunshot residue on his hands.
Like, seriously?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. Right.
I'm still, like, super duper stoked about how, you know, she's like, oh, I went shooting, like, you know, like 12 hours ago or something. You know, I'm like, I don't believe in hygiene.
Right.
And I also didn't, like, touch anything, which probably would have, like, wiped some of it off.
Exactly.
I slept with my hands up in the air like this to preserve it, just in case you guys needed to check them. Authorities questioned Matt Miller about the night he was with Whitley. He stated that she never shot the gun because she was afraid of it. Instead, she sat on his lap while he covered her ears when his cousin shot the gun.
And that's the thing, too. Like, there were also, like, the counts on this went back and forth as well because his cousin was like, yeah, she shot the gun. But Matt insisted that she never shot the gun, that she sat on his lap the entire time. And he believed that his cousin just was either drinking that night and doesn't remember and just, like, said whatever he thought was good.
Or, here's an interesting thought. Matt was trying to cover for her.
Maybe.
She's afraid of it. She wouldn't shoot a gun.
Maybe so.
And maybe the residue came from Matt rubbing his hands on her hands. Because
it's hard to...
some sort of avatar mating ritual or something like
that.
It's
hard to tell what they came up with, honestly.
Let's touch hands.
Oh, God. I wanted to mention, too, that at one point, Whitley and Dylan, I believe, both stated that they took a cigarette. Like, in case Christian's body looked like it had been moved, they're like, oh, well, we reached in his pocket and took a cigarette. Like, are you freaking kidding me?
What do you mean, took a cigarette?
Yeah, he had a pack of cigarettes in his pocket.
Oh, so they were like, oh, my God, let's just take cigarettes off this fucking dead person.
Yeah, like, who does that?
In this crime scene that shouldn't be disturbed. You know, like, oh,
Like,
go buy your own fucking pack.
How disrespectful.
Yeah, Jesus,
I mean, it,
Christ.
As if there wasn't enough disrespect involved in... ugh.
That's ridiculous. I didn't hear that.
Yeah.
I don't...
yeah, holy, it's ridiculous.
Fudge. So, both Dylan and Whitley went back and forth on which one of them actually found Christian. Whitley claimed in text messages to Matt Miller that she woke up to a gunshot and ran up to find Christian dead and that he had a gunshot in his throat. But in statements to police, she and Dylan claimed that Dylan found him.
He wasn't even shot in the throat.
No, he wasn't. And she didn't wake up to a gunshot?
Like, or did she? No, she did not. She didn't wake... I mean, she claimed to police that she didn't wake up.
Even if she did wake up to a gunshot, it wouldn't have been when everything was...
like a supposed... yeah, their timeline's just so screwed up that, like...
yeah.
When did everything actually happen?
Their moral compass is so fucked up, they probably can't find their way to the bathroom if somebody drew them a map. One thing police couldn't find was Christian's cell phone. Whitley told police that she didn't know where it was, but after officers told her that she wasn't leaving the police station until they had it, she oddly enough found it in her bag. They were able to look through call and text records from Christian's phone with Dylan and Matt Miller. Many believe that Christian would have already been dead at that point, and it was Whitley making those calls and texts.
Unless he was, like, calling and texting Matt Miller to be like, yo, why were you with my girlfriend?
Yeah.
I highly doubt Christian would have been texting with him. I mean, that's just my opinion.
Yeah, like, why would he?
Does he even
actually know the guy?
I mean, it's a small town, quote unquote, so like, they all ran. Yeah, like, he knows of him, but from my understanding, like, he's not just going to go out of his way to text him. Unless it was about Whitley, you know?
Right.
But I agree. I think it sounds like it was probably Whitley with Christian's phone, and Christian was probably already deceased.
Yeah, it's probably like another sort of like foolproof, fail-safe kind of, you know, like, oh, well, if we do this, then it'll look like, you know.
Exactly.
He was using his phone, even exactly. though we knew he was dead. Or some bullshit.
So Christian's Jeep, if you remember, he had parked his Jeep in the parking lot at Magnolia Marine the day that he left for the boat. It had been moved at one point while he was still on the boat in the early morning hours of February 26th. Apparently, Christian always kept his lockbox in his Jeep because he couldn't trust the people around him, like AKA Whitley. And he always kept about $7,000 in cash and another gun, which were both missing out of this lockbox.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Despite the fact that there was an active warrant out for the arrest of both Dylan and Whitley, neither of them have ever been arrested. And authorities have said that they are not going to reopen the case because it was ruled a suicide.
The Andreacchios have hired their own private investigators who have extensively looked into this case. They have done reenactments. Sheila Wasaki, one of the PIs, did the PI experience where they worked with citizen sleuths and other experts that looked at this case. They are all positive that this was absolutely not a suicide, but instead a homicide. There has been a petition started to reopen Christian's case. You can help by signing that. We will link it in the show notes.
There are also a lot of others that have covered this case. Again, Sheila Wasaki is one. She has a podcast called Without Warning. The Culpable podcast. I haven't really got to listen to that too much. And then Kendall Ray is a YouTuber. She's done a couple videos on Christian. Again, I haven't really got to watch her video yet either. But from what I hear, there's a lot of information in both of these. I have listened to the Without Warning podcast, and it has a lot of really interesting information in it, actually. I was talking with Trav about that the other day. Apparently, Whitley's living in Key West now, and they're kind of, like, investigating her some at this point.
Yeah. My favorite thing was Dylan's unwillingness to cooperate with these people.
Absolutely.
You know, like,
he's a punk.
He's a piece of shit. Like, some people have a reason or an excuse or, you know, like a mental instability or something like that. But this guy is just a piece of shit.
He was spitting.
And, you know, when they asked questions about, you know, like, oh, well,
yeah,
tell us, you know, like, what, you know, like.
True Crime Daily. Yeah, they had a little documentary out.
Very interesting. If you guys are interested in this case, you should watch that.
Absolutely. Like Trav said, there is a petition out there that they've started. So make sure you go over and sign it and try to help push to get Christian's case reopened.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, Sheila Wasaki and I can't think of the other private investigator off the top of my head, but they have done a really great job of working with the Andreacchios and trying to bring justice to their family. So.
And honestly, I would love to see Whitley and Dylan behind bars.
Yeah. Many people would.
So, let's sign that petition.
Yes.
Let's
do it.
Let's clean up America,
everybody. I already did.
Let's shovel the shit back into the bin.
Make America great again.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, this was the Christian Andreacchio case, as requested by many of you.
and delivered.
Yes.
By the twos of us.
Yes. All right, guys. We will see you next time. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at @HelloMyName_TrueCrimePod and on Twitter at @HelloCrime. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. See you next time.
Sayonara.
Bye.
That was a Titan Cast episode.